Thirdly, we come to B. R. Ambedkar. Anagarika Dharmapala and Alexandra David Neil came from wealthy, middle-class families. Bhimrao Ramji Ambedkar came from the very bottom of the social heap. He was born in Mau, in central India, in 1891. And he was born into an untouchable Hindu family. Hindus, as you know, are divided still into castes. The Brahmins are at the top, the Shudras are at the bottom, and you are born into a particular caste. And having been born into it, you can't get out of it, according to Hinduism. It's a sin, perhaps, even to try. Untouchables are even lower than Shudras. In a sense, untouchables are outside the caste system. And they're called untouchables because any contact with them pollutes other Hindus. That is to say, caste Hindus. Even their shadow pollutes. Traditionally, untouchables lived in ghettos of their own outside the village. And they could engage only in very menial occupations, such as removing the bodies of dead animals and scavenging and removing night soil. And they had to serve the villagers, the caste Hindu villagers, in return for a few scraps of food. They weren't allowed to enter Hindu temples, not allowed to attend Hindu schools, not allowed to own property, and they had no economic or political rights. They weren't allowed to better themselves in any way. Once an untouchable, always an untouchable, or at least so far as this life was concerned. So that's the traditional system. And it had been in force for 1,000 years, and it's still in force more or less, and was still in force more or less when Ambedkar was born. But even in his day, there were signs, tiny signs, that the caste system was beginning at least to weaken. I've said that Ambedkar was born in 1891. At that time, India was ruled by the British. It was still part of the British Empire. No doubt this was unfortunate, but for the untouchables at least, it did have its advantages, because the British had an army in India, and this army accepted untouchables into its ranks. In fact, there were untouchable regiments, and Ambedkar's father belonged to one of these. And in these untouchable regiments, the members of the regiments, the untouchables, were given a certain amount of education. Some of them even became schoolmasters. Ambedkar's father was one of these. He had become an army schoolmaster, and therefore he was able to help his son with his studies. The young Ambedkar was in fact a brilliant student. In 1908, when he was 17, he matriculated, and he was the first untouchable in India to do so. He was given a scholarship by a liberal-minded Indian prince. He continued his studies. He graduated in politics and economics, and subsequently he studied in the West, first at Columbia University, USA, and then at the London School of Economics. He also became bar at law, and finally returns to India in 1923, aged 32. He was one of the most highly qualified, as well as highly gifted men, in Indian public life. But he had not gained those qualifications simply in order to make money for himself. He'd gained them in order to equip himself to work for the uplift of his own people, the untouchables. He never forgot that he was himself an untouchable. Indeed, the Hindus did not allow him to forget it. Many continue to treat him as an untouchable, despite his education. And this was a source of great disappointment and bitterness to him. It only hardened his resolve to work for the uplift of his people. And he worked for the uplift of his people for the remainder of his life, dying in 1956. He founded newspapers. He started schools and colleges. He entered politics. He fought legal battles. He wrote books and articles. In fact, from 1932 onwards, the story of his life is inseparable from the story, from the history of modern India. In 1947, he became law minister in the first government of independent India, and as such he was responsible for drafting the constitution of the newly independent country. He was indeed, we may say, a many-sided personality. On this occasion, this afternoon, I'm only able to give a few highlights of his career from the Buddhist point of view. In 1927 came what is known as the Chowder Tank case. The Chowder Tank was a large tank of the traditional Indian type in the town of Mahad, in what is now Maharashtra state. Untouchables were not allowed to take water from this tank. But in 1927 it was opened to them by the local municipality to whom apparently, this was contested later, it belonged. So Ambedkar held a conference of untouchables at Mahad. 3,000 of them attended, and at the end of the conference Ambedkar and his followers marched to the edge of the tank and they took water and drank it. Now we may think that this is nothing, but in the India, the caste-ridden India of those days, this was a terrific thing to do. It was an extraordinary, even a revolutionary thing to do. The untouchables would dare to take water from a tank from which they were not supposed to take water. And there was a furious reaction from the local caste Hindus. Some of Ambedkar's followers on that occasion were attacked, beaten up. And not only that, a little while later, the caste Hindus decided that the untouchables, by drawing water from the tank, had polluted it. So it had to be purified. So how was it to be purified? Well, they called a few Brahmins together. The Brahmins put together 108 earthenware pots of water taken from the tank. And those pots were then mixed, the water in those pots was then mixed with curds, with milk, with cow dung and cow urine, because these are purifying elements according to Orthodox Hinduism. And then those pots with the water and all those purifying items were put back into the tank. And Vedic mantras were recited, and in this way the tank was purified. The water was purified. So Ambedkar and his followers naturally regarded this purification as an insult, because the touch of a human being could pollute, but the dung and urine of a cow could not pollute. So there was a reaction from the untouchable side, and that same year, 1927, what did they do under Ambedkar's leadership? They burned the Manusmriti. The Manusmriti, or Laws of Manu, is the sort of Bible of the Orthodox Hindus. It lays down laws regarding caste. Who can eat with whom? Who can marry with whom? Who can touch whom? Not touch whom? And so on. And among other things, it decreed, just to give an example, that molten wax should be poured into the ears of any Shudra who dared to listen to the words of the Vedas. So the burning of the Manusmriti naturally shocked Orthodox Hindus all over India. It symbolized the repudiation by the untouchables of the authority of the Hindu scriptures. Between 1931 and 1933, there was a series of clashes between Ambedkar and Mahatma Gandhi. Now, this might surprise some of you. In the West, we tend to look upon Mahatma Gandhi as a rather ideal figure, but I'm afraid in India, the untouchables don't quite see things in that way, because Gandhi was by birth a caste Hindu, but he claimed that he represented all Hindus, including the untouchables. But Ambedkar denied this. In fact, the untouchables themselves, most of them, didn't recognize Gandhi as their leader. They believed that only an untouchable himself could represent them. Only an untouchable could safeguard their interests. And in particular, Ambedkar believed that in a democratic India, there should be separate electorates for the untouchables. In fact, for all the scheduled caste people. He didn't want that the untouchables should be governed by caste Hindus. Now, Mahatma Gandhi was against separate electorates for untouchables, even though he had already agreed that Muslims, Christians and Sikhs should have them. So he therefore went on one of his fasts to death. That if Ambedkar did not withdraw his demand for separate electorates for the untouchables, then, well, he'd just fast to death. And in fact, he fasted a very long time and his life was in danger. And in the end, Ambedkar had to compromise, because he knew that if Gandhi died, then thousands of untouchables would die at the hands of the caste Hindus as a result. And during this period, the period of the fast, Ambedkar described himself as the most hated man in India. In 1935, he made his famous declaration that though he had been born a Hindu, he would not die one. He made this declaration at a conference attended by 10,000 untouchables. By this time, he was convinced that the caste Hindus were not going to change their ways. They weren't going to reform. They weren't going to treat the untouchables as human beings. In that same year, Ambedkar's wife died. He was married, by the way, when he was very young. He was 16 and his wife was 9. They had altogether 5 children, of whom only one survived. In 1936, he made a very important speech. Or rather, he didn't make the speech. He'd been invited to address a conference of reformist Hindu organizations, but he would not change the text of his speech. The organizers thought that he was speaking about the plight of the untouchables and the attitude of the caste Hindus rather too strongly, so the program was cancelled. And Ambedkar published this speech under the title of Annihilation of Caste. In my view, this is, in fact, his most important work. I consider it even more important than the Buddha and his Dhamma. It's quite a long speech, even longer than this one of mine. It's in 26 sections. It must have taken, or it would have taken, several hours for him to deliver it. But it's a brilliant exposition of what Dr. Ambedkar and his followers were up against. It reveals much of his mind and his character.